We continue in chapter 4, the sacrifice, the triune path, and the Lord of the sacrifice. In recent pages, Sri Aurobindo has been speaking about the necessity of a triple realization to come to the fruition demanded of the integral seeker. Must awaken to the nature of the divinity within. The soul spark must become a fire, must become known, must dominate the nature, must live too in the Avernusa. Pardon me. Must live too in the universality of the spirit. That reality which is omnipresent, within all, exceeding all, manifest in time and space, but beyond time and space, must also realize the transcendent, that which is true being, truly aware of itself, infinite in consciousness, infinite in its force, unmitigated in its delight. These three realizations must be held in unified awareness within the seeker. One must move from the awareness to a dynamic posture in which these truths, these realities, are acted upon in life within this physical frame. So it is a great challenge that Sri Aurobindo lays before us. And he's been speaking of the nature of the dualities that arrest our attention when we look at the universe. The first that he dealt with was the duality of Brahman-Maya. The second was the duality of Purusha and Prakriti. And the third, which he'll deal with shortly, is the duality or the bi-unity of Ishvara and Shakti. Now, if you've been comparing the vision that he presents in Synthesis of Yoga to what he has established in the Life Divine, you've noted that this sounds very similar to what is in the second chapter in the second book, part one, of the Life Divine, the chapter on Brahman, Purusha, and Ishvara, where there he deals with the dualities too and reconciles them in terms of oneness. What's interesting is that the Synthesis of Yoga as written in the Arya was greatly revised. This chapter that we're working on was a rather brief chapter in the Arya. Sri Aurobindo took it up around 1932 and greatly expanded it and laid this in front of us in 1932 that would later populate itself into the Life Divine around 1939 when he began to revise that. So this was something in the practicalities of the sadhana that he was developing and sharing with the aspirants around him that formulated itself or perhaps reformulated itself in the Life Divine. So interesting that it occurs here in conceptive form in Synthesis of Yoga and then migrates to the Life Divine. So he's just described that the duality, apparently, of Purusha Prakriti is finally revealed to be a single existent, one reality that is within the being of the master of all existence, the Lord of the sacrifice, as he determines it. Just as he discovered and revealed that Brahman and Maya are not two, but Maya is a conceptive form by which Brahman is distributed multitudinously in the universe. So two of the great dualities have been reconciled. Now he moves to another. On yet another line of approach, the seeker meets another corresponding, but in aspect, distinct duality, in which the Bayun character is more immediately apparent, the dynamic duality of Ishvara Shakti. Bayun means two and one, and of course you'll remember the section that we read from Savitri last time, the two who are one and play in many fields. Ishvara, the Sanskrit term for Lord. Shakti, the Sanskrit term for power. On one side, he, the seeker, the integral seeker, is aware of an infinite and self-existent Godhead in being, who contains all things in an ineffable potentiality of existence, a self of all selves, a soul of all souls, a spiritual substance of all substances, an impersonal, inexpressible existence, but at the same time, an illimitable person who is here self-represented in numberless personality, a master of knowledge, a master of forces, a lord of love and bliss and beauty, a single origin of the worlds, a self-manifester and self-creator, a cosmic spirit, a universal mind, a universal life, the conscious and living reality, supporting the appearance which we sense as unconscious inanimate matter. So that's the he side of this third duality describing Ishvara Shakti, the one who is two and yet one. This is the he. And note that all of these many characteristics, these attributes of divine existence, are formulated and fashioned into a universal mind, a universal life, and a universal reality of matter. In other words, whatever that might be above, it has fully invested itself here in this world, tangible to our touch and experience. On the other side, he becomes aware of the same Godhead in effectuating consciousness and power put forth as a self-aware force that contains and carries all within her and is charged to manifest it in universal time and space. And this is the she. So now he's described the he and the she. It is evident to him, this again is the integral seeker who is trying to gain the direct experience of the divine. It is evident to him that here there is one supreme and infinite being represented to us in two different sides of itself, obverse and reverse in relation to each other. A coin has two sides, obverse and reverse. Heads and tails. All is either prepared or pre-existent in the Godhead in being and issues from it and is upheld by its will and presence. All is brought out, carried in movement by the Godhead in power. All becomes and acts and develops by her and in her its individual or its cosmic purpose. So based on being, there is a demonstration of power, which is will effectuating itself in multiplying the one endlessly. It is again a duality necessary for the manifestation, creating and enabling that double current of energy which seems always necessary for the world workings. Two poles of the same being, but here closer to each other and always very evidently carrying each the powers of the other in its essence and its dynamic nature. At the same time, by the fact that the two great elements of the divine mystery, the personal and the impersonal, are here fused together, the seeker of the integral truth feels in the duality of Ishvara Shakti his closeness to a more intimate and ultimate secret of the divine transcendence and the manifestation than that offered to him by any other experience. So again, he lands on experience, more of that in a moment. For the Ishvara Shakti, the divine conscious force and world mother, becomes a mediatrix between the eternal one and the manifested many. On one side, by the play of the energies which she brings from the one, she manifests the multiple divine in the universe, involving and evolving its endless appearances out of her revealing substance. On the other, by the reascending current of the same energies, she leads back all towards that from which they have issued, so that the soul, in its evolutionary manifestation, may more and more return towards the divinity there or here, put on its divine character. So she is the gate by which the one becomes the many and passes into manifestation. She is the course downwards in terms of the involution, the stationing of plane after plane after plane as a layer cake all the way down to what seems to be the abysmal inconscience, and she is the force that draws it back up and asks the soul, invests in the soul, the critically important mission of awakening back to its own nature above, or, after so evolving, manifest it here and put on the divine character inherent to it above, here in this very cosmos. So she is the gateway. She is the yoga that creates the world. She is the yoga that restores us back into unity with what we originally were. She is the path. She is the force that propels us. She is all. There is not in her, although she devises a cosmic mechanism, the character of an inconscient mechanical executrix, which we find in the first physiognomy of Prakriti, the nature force. Neither is there that sense of an unreality creatrix of illusions or semi-illusions, which is attached to our first view of Maya. So this is a different kind of duality. This is not looking at nature as being dumb and only the Purusha, the conscious spirit, divorced from it, has real awareness. This is not a play of trickery by a falsehood substituting Maya that wants us to be lost in ignorance. This is not that kind of duality. And both of those views debase nature. To regard nature as inconscient, as mere Prakriti, the working of a thing, given motility only because Purusha glances at it, Or to say that it is a cheat is to misuse and mischaracterize the energy of the creative power of the Divine Mother. It is at once clear to the experiencing soul that here is a conscious power of one substance and nature with the Supreme from whom she came. Conscious power, chit shakti. And again, Sri Aurobindo underlines to the experiencing soul because that is key to the true perception of reality. Sri Aurobindo's epistemology is based not simply on rational consistency, not on the formulation of fundamental principles and following them out in a logical chain, but on the discovery of the truth of things through a penetrating experience of consciousness, that consciousness can become one in being and erase whatever divisions there are and leap over the chasms of ignorance and arrive at veridical knowledge, true knowledge. So for him, the ultimate touchstone is experiential. Whatever you may have read, whatever you may think, is well and good. It may be sound so far as it goes, but until you have the experience, until finally you go beyond the experience and have the realization, and beyond that, until you empower the realization in terms of your total being, your work is not done and your knowledge has not been put to the fullest test. So let's read that again. It is at once clear to the experiencing soul that here is a conscious power of one substance and nature with the Supreme from whom she came. So Ishvara and Shakti are a single reality. Polarity is there, but is polarity that is necessary for the workings of the cosmos. If she seems to have plunged us into the ignorance and inconscience, in pursuance of a plan we cannot yet interpret, if her forces present themselves as all these ambiguous forces of the universe, yet it becomes visible before long that she is working for the development of the divine consciousness in us, and that she stands above, drawing us to her own higher entity, revealing to us more and more the very essence of the divine knowledge, will, and ananda. Even in the movements of the ignorance, the soul of the seeker becomes aware of her conscious guidance, supporting his steps and leading them slowly or swiftly, straight or by many detours, out of the darkness into the light of a greater consciousness, out of mortality into immortality, out of evil and suffering towards the highest good and felicity, of which as yet his human mind can form only a faint image. And this we were just chanting a few minutes ago. This is the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad 3.28, Asatoma Satgamaya, etc. Lead me from darkness. Lead me from non-being to true being. Lead me from darkness to light. Lead me from death to immortality. Thus, her power is at once liberative and dynamic, creative, effective, creative not only of things as they are, but of things that are to be, for eliminating the twisted and tangled movements of his lower consciousness, made of the stuff of the ignorance, it rebuilds and new makes his soul and nature into the substance and forces of a higher divine nature. So this higher divine nature, Para-Prakriti, Mahashakti, as in the tantric scheme of things, substitutes for the ignorance which is willing to surrender itself the power, the puissance, the beauty, the force, the purity of the higher consciousness, which descends and takes hold of the being bodily, vitally, mentally. In this duality, too, there is possible a separative experience. At one pole of it, the seeker may be conscious only of the master of existence putting forth on him his energies of knowledge, power, and bliss to liberate and divinize. The Shakti may appear to him only an impersonal force expressive of these things or an attribute of the Ishvara. And this latter would be similar to how even the Supreme Nature is regarded in the Bhagavad Gita. At the other pole, he may encounter the World Mother, creatrix of the universe, putting forth the gods and the worlds and all things and existences out of her spirit substance. And this would be, as we find it in the Devi Mahatmya from around the 5th century, in which she, the Divine Mother, is supreme, and all the gods are manifestations of her being, even Shiva and Vishnu. Or, even if he sees both aspects, it may be with an unequal separating vision, subordinating one to the other, regarding the Shakti only as a means for approaching the Ishvara. There results a one-sided tendency or a lack of balance, a power of effectuation not perfectly supported, or a light of revelation not perfectly dynamic. It is when a complete union of the two sides of the duality is effected and rules his consciousness that he begins to open to a fuller power that will draw him altogether out of the confused clash of ideas and forces here into a higher truth and enable the descent of that truth to illumine and deliver and act sovereignly upon this world of ignorance. Of course, this is based on his own sadhana, flowing upon his two great realizations, Brahmic Nirvana, the omnipresent Godhead, Vasudeva, and then the implementation of higher forces from above that descended and moved into his being such that he could articulate a different kind of integrality than was offered in other Vedantic paths, and something that was more surely founded often than what was offered in tantric paths. So it is a unique synthesis that we have in his integral yoga. But still, it comes to allowing, permitting the Mahashakti to effectuate her will in the receptive aspirant. It is when, again, a complete union of the two sides of the duality is effected and rules his consciousness that he begins to open to a fuller power that will draw him altogether out of the confused clash of ideas and forces here into a higher truth and enable the descent of that truth to illumine and deliver and act sovereignly upon this world of ignorance. He has begun to lay his hand on the integral secret, which in its fullness can be grasped only when he overpasses the double term that reigns here of knowledge inextricably intertwined with an original ignorance, and crosses the border where spiritual mind disappears into supramental gnosis. It is through this third and most dynamic dual aspect of the One, that the seeker begins with the most integral completeness to enter into the deepest secret of the being of the Lord of the Sacrifice. So this, if you can imagine, is an all-reconciling experience that carries one beyond and through the portals of the mind, delivering one into the ranges of the supramental consciousness, which itself is an expression of the nature of Satchit Ananda, that conscious existent whose nature is delight. That is the nature of the Purushottama, the Supreme Person, Ishvara, who rules all and is established in all, and is he who is ruled by that One, who is not different from Ishwari, the Supreme Shakti. For it is behind the mystery of the presence of personality in an apparently impersonal universe, as in that of consciousness manifesting out of the inconscient, life out of the inanimate, soul out of brute matter, that is hidden the solution of the riddle of existence. Here again is another dynamic duality more pervading than appears at first view and deeply necessary to the play of the slowly self-revealing power. It is possible for the seeker in his spiritual experience, standing at one pole of the duality, to follow mind in seeing a fundamental impersonality everywhere. The evolving soul in the material world begins from a vast impersonal inconscience in which our inner sight yet perceives the presence of a veiled infinite spirit. It proceeds with the emergence of a precarious consciousness and personality that even at their fullest have the look of an episode, but an episode that repeats itself in a constant series. It arises through experience of life out of mind into an infinite, impersonal, and absolute superconscience in which personality, mind consciousness, life consciousness seem all to disappear by a liberating annihilation, nirvana. This is the path of knowledge. This is the yoga of knowledge as it moves towards moksha and exceeds all dualities. At a lower pitch, he still experiences this fundamental impersonality as an immense liberating force everywhere. It releases his knowledge from the narrowness of personal mind, his will from the clutch of personal desire, his heart from the bondage of petty mutable emotions, his life from its petty personal groove, his soul from ego, and it allows them to embrace calm, equality, wideness, universality, infinity. So in this there is a liberation from the confining ego. Very desirable, if we can put it like that. A yoga of works would seem to require personality as its mainstay, almost its source. But here too, the impersonal is found to be the most direct liberating force. It is through a wide, egoless impersonality that one can become a free worker and a divine creator. It is not surprising that the overwhelming power of this experience from the impersonal pole of the duality should have moved the sages to declare this to be the one way and an impersonal superconscience to be the sole truth of the eternal. This, of course, was the first realization given to Sri Aurobindo in 1908. So he's touched upon the yogas of knowledge, the yoga of works and love. But still, to the seeker, standing at the opposite pole of the duality, another line of experience appears which justifies an intuition deeply seated behind the heart and in our very life force, that personality, like consciousness, life, soul, is not a brief-lived stranger in an impersonal eternity, but contains the very meaning of existence. This fine flower of the cosmic energy carries in it a forecast of the aim and a hint of the very motive of the universal labor. So again, the psyche is key to the cosmos, linked to all, above and around and below. As an occult vision opens in him, he becomes aware of worlds behind in which consciousness and personality hold an enormous place and assume a premier value. Even here in the material world, to this occult vision, the inconscience of matter fills with a secret pervading consciousness. Its inanimation harbors a vibrant life. Its mechanism is the device of an indwelling intelligence. God and soul are everywhere. Above all stands an infinite conscious being who is variously self-expressed in all these worlds. Impersonality is only a first means of that expression. It is a field of principles and forces, an equal basis of manifestation. But these forces express themselves through beings, have conscious spirits at their head, and are the emanation of a one conscious being who is their source. A multiple, innumerable personality expressing that one is the very sense and central aim of the manifestation. And if now personality seems to be narrow, fragmentary, restrictive, it is only because it has not opened to its source or flowered into its own divine truth and fullness, packing itself with the universal and the infinite. Thus, the world creation is no more an illusion, a fortuitous mechanism, a play that need not have happened, a flux without consequence. It is an intimate dynamism of the conscious and living eternal. So this frees the soul from bondage to smallness in the ego to move into a universally creative action, speaking for the cosmos as an individual, liberating self and then reaching out and liberating all others, finding itself felicity, but felicitating all others in a growth of mutuality beyond association towards oneness. This extreme opposition of view from the two poles of one existence creates no fundamental difficulty for the seeker of the integral yoga, for his whole experience has shown him the necessity of these double terms and their currents of energy, negative and positive in relation to each other, for the manifestation of what is within the one existence. The divine needed both, needed the capacity to involve, needed the capacity to evolve, to unveil all the riches after investing all the riches in the cosmos. For himself, Personality and impersonality have been the two wings of his spiritual ascension, and he has the prevision that he will reach a height where their helpful interaction will pass into a fusion of their powers and disclose the integral reality and release into action the original force of the divine. So this means attaining the supramental so that the Chit Shakti can express through the supramental all that is. The Chit Shakti projects the Vijnana. Not only in the fundamental aspects, but in all the working of his sadhana, he has felt their double truth and mutually complementary working. An impersonal presence has dominated from above or penetrated and occupied his nature. A light descending has suffused his mind, life power, the very cells of his body, illumined them with knowledge, revealed him to himself down to his most disguised and unsuspected movements, exposing, purifying, destroying, or brilliantly changing all that belonged to the ignorance. This is his experience on the 24th of November in 1926, the day that we call the Siddhi Day, and founded on his first two great realizations, again, Brahma-Nirvana and the universal omnipresent Godhead, but then linking them together with a dynamic energy that flowed from above and revealed to him the process and the path of an integral yoga. So this eventuated through lengthy tapasya, stretching more than a decade, in that experience on the 24th of November. Here he writes about it, and of course he's spoken about it too in a couple of poems that he's written, Descent and Light, available in the second volume of his collected poems. Second volume of his collected works, it's his collected poems. A force has poured into him in currents, or like a sea, worked in his being and all its members, dissolved, new made, reshaped, transfigured everywhere. A bliss has invaded him and shown that it can make suffering and sorrow impossible and turn pain itself into divine pleasure. A love without limits has joined him to all creatures or revealed to him a world of inseparable intimacy and unspeakable sweetness and beauty, and begun to impose its law of perfection and its ecstasy even amidst the disharmony of terrestrial life. And this again was his experience here in this world, in that world that he created in Pondicherry, the Sri Aurobindo ashram, a microcosm of the larger universe, where there was a divine experiment to see how far can we bring this consciousness from above into this matter. And you can see how impactful it was, because all of this occurred in the cells of his body. A love without limits has joined him to all creatures, or revealed to him a world of inseparable intimacy and unspeakable sweetness and beauty, and begun to impose its law of perfection and its ecstasy even amidst the disharmony of terrestrial life. You can see him writing further about that in other poems like Despair on the Staircase. A spiritual truth and right, satyam ritam, have convicted the good and evil of this world of imperfection or of falsehood, and unveiled a supreme good and its clue of subtle harmony and its sublimation of action and feeling and knowledge. So he's speaking here about the descent of the supramental consciousness into the material earth to effect this change and be present here, and in a sense overturning the right of the ignorance to rule. But behind all these and in them, he has felt a divinity who is all these things, a bringer of light, a guide and all-knower, a master of force, a giver of bliss, friend, helper, father, mother, playmate in the world game, an absolute master of his being, his soul's beloved and lover. All relations known to human personality are there in the soul's contact with the divine. But they rise towards superhuman levels and compel him towards a divine nature. So again, nothing exists in the human aspirant that must be thrown out, that must be ground out of existence, that must somehow be annihilated. But all must be raised, all must be sublated into the higher form that they represent darkly here. But it's a great quest. It is a growth from darkness to light, from death to immortality, from partial being to full being. I know it's been a long stretch just to get here, and I know we've only a page or so to go to finish this little semi-section, but we're going to put a pause here and continue next week, and likely finish the chapter. We were reading from Savitri last time we met in Book 1, the Book of Beginnings, in Canto 4, The Secret Knowledge, and we were on page 63. So that was when we ended. I'm going to pick it up from that very point and go forward a little farther. Pardon me. This is the knot that ties together the stars. The two who are one are the secret of all power. The two who are one are the might and right in things. His soul, silence, supports the world and her. His acts are her commandments' registers. Happy, inert, he lies beneath her feet. His breast he offers for her cosmic dance, of which our lives are the quivering theater, and none could bear but for his strength within, yet none would leave because of his delight. His works, his thoughts have been devised by her. His being is a mirror vast of hers. Active, inspired by her, he speaks and moves. His deeds obey her heart's unspoken demands. Passive, he bears the impacts of the world as if her touches shaping his soul and life. His journey through the days is her sun march. He runs upon her roads. Hers is his course. A witness and student of her joy and dole, a partner in her evil and her good, he has consented to her passionate ways. He is driven by her sweet and dreadful force. His sanctioning name initials all her works. His silence is his signature to her deeds. In the execution of her drama's scheme, in her fancies of the moment and its mood, in the march of this obvious, ordinary world, where all is deep and strange to the eyes that see, and nature's common forms are marvel-wefts, She, through his witness sight and motion of might, unrolls the material of her cosmic act, her happenings that exalt and smite the soul, her force that moves, her powers that save and slay, her word that in the silence speaks to our hearts, her silence that transcends the summit word, her heights and depths to which our spirit moves, her events that weave the texture of our lives and by which we find or lose ourselves. Things sweet and bitter, magnificent and mean, things terrible and beautiful and divine. Her empire in the cosmos she has built. He is governed by her subtle and mighty laws. Her consciousness, his consciousness, is a babe upon her knees, his being a field of her vast experiment. Her endless space is the playground of his thoughts. She binds to knowledge of the shapes of time and the creative error of limiting mind and chance that wears the rigid face of fate and her sport of death and pain and nescience, his changed and struggling immortality. His soul is a subtle atom in a mass, his substance a material for her works. His spirit survives amid the death of things. He climbs to eternity through being's gaps. He is carried by her from night to deathless light. This grand surrender is his free will's gift, his pure transcendent force submits to hers. In the mystery of her cosmic ignorance, in the insoluble riddle of her play, a creature made of perishable stuff, in the pattern she has set for him he moves. He thinks with her thoughts, with her trouble his bosom heaves. He seems the thing that she would have him seem. He is whatever her artist will can make. Although she drives him on her fancy's roads, at play with him as with her child or slave, to freedom and the eternal's mastery, and immortality's stand above the world, she moves her seeming puppet of an hour. Even in his mortal session in body's house, an aimless traveler between birth and death, ephemeral, dreaming of immortality, to reign she spurs him. He takes up her powers. He has harnessed her to the yoke of her own law. His face of human thought puts on a crown. Held in her leash, bound to her veiled caprice, he studies her waves, if so he may prevail even for an hour, and she work out his will. He makes of her his moment passion's serf. To obey she feigns, she follows her creature's lead. For him she was made, lives only for his use. But conquering her, then is he most her slave. He is her dependent, all his means are hers. Nothing without her he can, she rules him still. He sees within the face of deity. The Godhead breaks out through the human mold. Her highest heights she unmasks and is his mate. Namaste. Jai Ma.